it will not lead to fun in the egoistic sense. That moment, if it's a real moment and you don't immediately sell it like a prostitute to your ego, but you stick with it, you stay there, and you allow to touch that feeling, to let it even last a moment within your awareness, it will propel you into an intensity of practice that you will have never seen before. Hello and welcome. You are listening to A Walk in the Heart, a podcast about Tantra, psychology, and spirituality. Join us as we explore what spiritual wisdom can offer to people like you and me. Thank you for being here. Hi everybody, welcome back to another episode of A Walk in the Heart, our podcast for psychology, tantra, and spirituality. I'm your host, Maria Blandin-Wegener. I'm a long-term practitioner of yoga and tantra, also a teacher of the above, and a psychologist as well. Today I'm going to talk again with my co-host Uriel Yariv about tantra, in order to find out what that little word in our subtitle of the podcast actually means. So that should be an interesting episode, and probably not the last one on this subject, as it is quite a vast subject to tackle. A few thousand years of a very mystical and interesting path that has many subcurrents and many lineages to it. So for sure there will come more. And before we get to it, please be so kind and like and subscribe and review and give us 5 stars and all the little unicorn points and everything that you can, please give us, so that we can continue with this podcast. As you can see, we will not put any advertising, and we will also not plan to do so. We might plug here and there a retreat of ours once those come back. But otherwise, we'll keep it quite clean here. But therefore, it is very important that you give us your reviews on iTunes, on your podcast provider. Just go ahead and leave us a good review and 5-star rating and all of those good things. And of course, if you're on YouTube or somewhere where you can hit like and subscribe buttons and bells and notification things and so forth, then please do that as well. Also, in that way, we know that you like what we're doing, and we would like to know that as an encouragement to keep going and to provide more content as you will, in the same style as you will hear today. So that being said, let's get to the episode. Welcome back, everyone, to A Walk in the Heart, our podcast on psychology, tantra, and all things spiritual. My co-host, Uriel Yariv, is also here with me, as you can hear, and he's in a good mood, so I hope something good's going to come out of this. And today we're going to tackle the age-old question that all of your grandmothers and grandfathers and ancestors have asked themselves, which is, what is tantra?
Yes.
That's what you wanted to talk about, right?
That's what I wanted to talk about, I confirm.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Uriel thought, we have this podcast, psychology, tantra, spirituality. Psychology might be clear, spirituality might be a little less clear, but still. But then what's the deal with tantra? Mm. And then maybe some of you actually found this podcast because you typed in the keyword tantra. And we might want to clarify, what kind of tantra are we talking about?
What kind of tantra are we talking about?
Because there's lots of stuff that calls itself tantra. But is it tantra?
Mm.
We'll hopefully find out today.
Yes. And also those who already know some things about tantra and you want to explain to your friends what's tantra.
Yeah.
This is a good podcast because we'll try to give you some pointers, and then you can have a very coherent explanation and answer your grandmother or people in your life.
Yeah, has it as what a burning is tantra? Interest.
Yes.
So what is tantra then?
My grandmother, God rest her soul, when we showed her one of the flyers we made for a Tantra workshop we did at the time in Israel, she read it and she wanted to participate. So she looked and she said, but why do you do Tantra and not mantra? That was her using her lexicon for that. It was a very sweet sweet discussion with her. Yes.
And then did you explain to her, for example, the connection between Tantra and mantra?
It was 15 years ago. I have no idea what I answered, but I remember the question. Yes.
So why do you Tantra instead of mantra?
Why do you Tantra instead of... So what is Tantra about?
Please.
Yes, please. So Tantra is a very fascinating, very mysterious spiritual path that goes across different spiritual traditions. We find...
I want to stop you right there.
Stop me right there.
Because I want to keep it somehow synthesized for everyone. And one important thing that you already said is Tantra indeed is a spiritual path.
Mm.
And it is not a, the, like people might think, oh, Tantra, that's the Kama Sutra, no? No, the Kama Sutra is a book about lovemaking, courting, and the alike, marriage. Tantra is a spiritual path. I just want to underline that because I thought you said already something very important. Tantra is not, I went to some California workshop and we learned about some sexual positions, or we learned about what is a man should be like in a relationship and what should a woman be like, and then maybe we mixed in some yoga asanas or something. Tantra is a spiritual path, just to make that very clear.
Yeah. So in the same way to...
what does that mean, by the way, a spiritual path? Sorry.
Just a moment. Let me first bounce off your idea and then I'll say that.
All right.
So in the same... Or maybe I'll answer it integrative with what I wanted to Perfect. Say. Now I find a place to do that while you're putting your nice lipstick there. So I see more than you hear.
I should do with video soon.
Yeah. So... In the same way that when you go to a mindfulness workshop that is based on Buddhism and you can take a touch of Buddhism into your life, into your company, today is very popular with the companies do that because it really helps the company if they all become a bit more mindful. So there's all sorts of little Tantra workshops, some of them good, some of them perhaps a bit superficial. But the good Tantra workshops, yeah, you can take a little bit of flavor into of Tantra into your life, become a little bit more intense, more lively, more free, more deep, more real, more authentic. And that would be a touch of. But the touch of a mindfulness workshop is not Buddhism. Mm. So a touch of a Tantra workshop is not Tantra. It is a flavor. You have an experience, which is sometimes better than reading a book.
That's a good point. Just again, I'm the voice of synthesis.
Voice of sentences, yes.
It's a very good point to understand that also there's a difference between, that counts actually for any spiritual path, the method and the path itself. And I know that you're going to explain to us what does it mean, the spiritual path, but this is a very good point that, okay, mindfulness is part of Buddhism, and maybe the methods that you might learn in one workshop or another, also the methods that you might learn in one of our workshops,
mm-hmm.
that's like a little snippet, a little window into the universe of Tantra, but it doesn't constitute what Tantra is. Just because maybe we went to a Kundalini workshop, now we know what is Tantra.
Yes. Yes, and then a spiritual path is a set of understandings and hopefully some very practical methods that will allow the individual to return to the universal, to return home, if you may, to gradually live more and more spiritual ideals in one's life with this tangency eventually to awaken all virtues, to overcome all vices, to overcome ignorance and illusion, to overcome egoism and selfishness, and eventually becoming tangent to spiritual perfection, to enlightenment, Christ consciousness, whatever you call it, on the path that you are in, mukta. whatever the final goal is. But the spiritual path is what connects. Yeah, the individual is at one point, and the goal of spirituality is another point, and the line, the path that connects the individual to the supreme spiritual goal and to all the steps of the ladder on the way, that would be the spiritual path. So Tantra is working in this way. It is to connect the individual to the supreme spiritual reality, going on this gradual and sometimes extremely sudden path.
Now, what I want to add here, and I like very much the way that you describe spiritual path in general. What I want to add is that Tantra somehow, and I want to know also if you agree, Tantra, and maybe depending on the subcurrent of it, some styles of Taoism, maybe, yeah, I mean, Tantra and Hinduism are anyways quite much interwoven with one another. Maybe some of the Occidental alchemical traditions might count into this, but the specificity of this path is somehow that it sort of makes sense for everyone, no matter where you're at. This I find so interesting about it. Like, when you beat the drum of Tantra down in the valley where nobody is interested to sit up on the mountain and reach enlightenment, you will still find something very useful, meaningful, and practical within it, which I find very interesting. If I look at, like, my own culture is mainly based on the Christian viewpoints, and then if you look at Christian mystics, for example, I mean, they're very impressive, and I have a great love for them. As much as I admire the mystics of Christianity, it's sort of like, okay, that's it. You decide to go from here to the top of the mountain, and that's it. And until you reach the top of the mountain, A, there's not much nice things for you. It's mainly suffering and difficulty and trials and so on. And I'm not saying that in Tantra it's not like that also at some point, for sure. But somehow you need to, if you are there in the valley and the prophet is telling you, oh, I'll join the Christian belief, then you make a decision. Now I leave my family and I leave my friends and I leave my job and I leave everything behind and I give my life to God. Beautiful. You're very clear and straightforward with what you're doing. And then that's where you start the path. With the tantric path, it seems to be that, and that can be a difficulty, but it's also, of course, wonderful, that no matter where you speak about Tantra, to whomever, they will find something wonderful in it. May that be, and this is something that Tantra became, unfortunately, solely famous for, which is, okay, you want to improve your love life? Sure, Tantra has answers for that. You want to improve your career? Tantra has answers for that. You want to, et cetera, whatever it is that you have going on in your life, your family life, your overall inner world, what kind of conflict you carry inside, and, it will always, you will always find a good tool, a good attitude, a good thing to use to get better in that area. So Tantra can somehow answer to a lot of different, or let's not say to a lot of different, but rather to anything in life and any walk of life, it can sort of add something good. Now, that might be then the window into the actual path. But what I find also important to understand is just because you got in touch with the tantric method that maybe opened your eyes to something and maybe opened your heart to something else, that doesn't make it now the fullness of the tantric path. It's not enough to say, well, I learned some nice sensual positions and a good attitude of love and heartfulness with my beloved, and we enjoy wonderful explorations in the bedroom. If these are then not geared towards enlightenment, of course, sometimes you might by grace just stumble into enlightenment, but mostly not. So I feel this is a very interesting particularity of the tantric path, that wherever you're at, you will gain something from it. It will be interesting to fix your back. It will be interesting to open your heart. It will be interesting to be more focused. It will be interesting to further a lot of things within your life. But it is also a spiritual path. Imagine you would go to church on Sunday and they would give you answers to anything you have problems with. And of course, implicitly they do, because they say, well, connect to God. Yeah, connect to God always solves everything. Of course, but you might not have that gateway open just yet. You might be interested to become more quiet and calm and heartful. And you might find it difficult to connect maybe to, you know, a certain style, maybe even a bit of a dogma or something like that.
Yes, it's true. And many of the people that come to our school, they start like that. And there is this moment, you know, after a few weeks of practice, they practice some methods for becoming more self-confident, and here they are more confident. They practice some methods for becoming more focused, and indeed they are more focused, or they are more loving, and there is this kind of miracle look that I remember seeing many, many times. Either I see in people in class or in Zoom, but you see somebody there is lit up because he transformed something and he realized through the tantric methods, boom, well, I'm confident now. Woof, I'm loving now. Oh, I'm focused now. Oh, my mind is at peace now. Yay, 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 yay. How amazing. I am reborn in a way. And very often, like you say, people that come to us, they're not interested in a very high spiritual goal. Most of the people aren't. But then once they have a collection of miracles and their level of consciousness rises and they become more loving, more quiet, more focused, then the deeper goes, it's like the waters quieten, and then you see the depth of your being and you say, well, in the end of the day, now I'm good financially, I'm good sexually, I'm good on the professional level, I'm good on the social level, I'm good on the mind, I'm focused and quiet. What do I really want now? And I'm on, I'm vital, I'm full of enthusiasm for everything I do. I'm successful, I do a few hours of tantric practice every day. It makes my whole life super amazing. But what's deeper? And some of the people, they start to discover, okay, I have actually a wish for the absolute. And I'm shameless about it. I'm willing to seek for the highest goal, even that I live now and I'm not Indian and I'm not in the Himalaya and I'm not Tibetan and I'm whatever. I want to go for that. My heart's going for that. I already succeeded so many things. So indeed, they get the flavor from that. And that's mostly happening through the work with the system of the chakras. So the tantric texts from the Buddhist texts about the life of Naropa and the other tantric texts from India, the Shiva Samhita, Giranda Samhita, Goraksha Samhita, and the Hatha Yoga Pradipika and others, they describe in detail this journey of the chakras. And it's extremely practical. And in our school, we somehow, our teachers, Greek and Advaita and others, they made this path now very applicable for human life. And then working on the chakras, which is an integral part of Tantra, it is one of the gifts of Tantra to the world, working systematically on the chakras, half an hour, 1 hour every day, or why not 3 hours, you have all these miracles that Blandine spoke about, that people attain what they want to attain in life, that kind of success, a healing, a vitality, a confidence. But then as you harmonize through this work on the chakras, through the systematic work on the chakras that Tantra offers, you get a taste for much more. And many of our students started like that, and now they are full on the path of enlightenment. And their eyes are just sparkling with longing, and they are willing to take the means and to take the discipline and to break down their vices and lower tendencies and to really climb the mountain full power. And that's very beautiful to see. So indeed, Tantra becomes relevant in this way, as you mentioned.
I'm asking myself, so if we want to tackle this question, what is Tantra? What is Tantra all about? How does it work? Whatever. So we clarified it's a spiritual path. That means you can go all the way to the top of the mountain, as you just said. You can go all the way home. You can go all the way to the absolute. You can go all the way into complete self-knowledge. You can all go all the way back into the blissful void, whatever concept works for you. But you can go all the way. That's the point of unification of the individual with the universal, which is the whole point of spirituality. On top of that, you gain something from the tantric path wherever you sit, wherever in your life you are at, whatever you might need, and you might actually find that as a gateway into the path. You might actually go and, for example, receive a real, if really truly integrated tantric massage, and you thought you have yourself a little pleasure on a Saturday evening, and you come out of there not to saying, well, indeed, I have an energetic body. I just experienced myself expanding into the size of the room. Indeed, love is tangible without any object. I can feel completely loved and held and understood and seen and completed by a complete perfect stranger who is not at all a stranger, because when the souls meet. So all of these are possibilities to enter the tantric path. Now, I'm wondering, with our question, what is Tantra? Are we interested in giving a bit more of a historical background? Are we interested to speak about right-hand Tantra, left-hand Tantra? Are we interested in telling a bit about how does the tantric path unfold and look like? Do we want to speak about some methodology or some principles? What's the thing?
I would say we have a short history, and then we'll look a little bit about what's unique and differentiated in Tantra. What in Tantra stands out? Mm-hmm. What's the, you know, it stands out between Buddhism and Tantric Buddhism, between Hinduism and Tantric Buddhism, Tantric Hinduism, and what's special about it? In what way is different than Taoism, different than Christianity? So that would be, I would say, interesting. We can touch a little bit on the history.
As you're the history nerd, I'll give you the mic.
I'm history nerd. So we find tantric texts and references to Tantra probably already at least 3,000 years ago. Some historians and archaeologists, they connect it even all the way up to the Harappa Valley in India 5,000 years ago. It's indecisive. I read a bit. It's indecisive if it's that old. But if we look at Buddha tells his disciples 2,600 years ago, or 2,500 something years ago, he tells his disciples, I leave you with Sutra and Tantra. There's a lot of books written about what's the difference between Sutra and Tantra, and one of them, supervised by the Dalai Lama recently, the conclusion of these texts, as he explains it there, is a very long, complicated text. Tantra involves also the active worship of gods and goddesses, of divine entities, whereas the sutra that Buddha left does not involve that. But Buddha himself was initiated in Tantra. When he was in the forest, he learned Tantra, and then he taught Tantra. And then he gave it the Buddhist twist. The Tantras themselves, if we look at the main text, they had a few golden ages, a few centuries after the time of Buddha, with King Akshobhya and the great Buddhist universities there.
King Ashok.
Oh yeah, King Ashok. Sorry, Akshobhya is a divine
entity. That's another Buddha.
Yes, another Buddha. So King Ashok, 3rd century BC. And other golden ages we see with the Pali kings in India, 9th to 12th century. And there we find Abhinavagupta's Tantra Loka, Tantra Sara, also from Abhinavagupta, that summarizes Tantra, the Visnana Bhairava Tantra, Spandakarika, and other texts. So there is a golden age in Buddhism. There's another golden age in Kashmir. And it is intertwined. You cannot separate Hinduism from Tantra. They are so intertwined and so connected, but Tantra stayed essentially not institutionalized. It never became, there was not a country which is just tantric. Yeah, you can say in Bhutan and in Tibet it is a form of tantric Buddhism, but it's more Buddhist countries with a tantric touch. So Tantra remains somehow free from institutes, which also makes it historically a little bit harder to grasp, but we find many, many tantric texts. We'll mention also Tantra Raja and Mahanirvana Tantra, Kularnava Tantra, and others that speak about mantras, about epochs, and then all the text, Hatha Yoga itself, that is practiced today, is a part of Tantra. So we mentioned before Hatha Yoga Pradipika and Shiva Samhita. But we find tantric texts throughout the ages and tantric masters throughout the ages, both in Buddhism and in Hinduism. We find up to from the ancient masters like Abhinavagupta and Kshema Raja in Kashmir, up to more recent tantric masters as the right-hand masters, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa in the 19th century, and that this is the path he recommended of Tantra and of Bhakti. He said this is what is suitable for Kali Yuga, and up to Sri Aurobindo and the masters from our path, Greek and others, and some writers such as Daniel Odier now in the 20th and 21st century.
More as a practitioner than more as a master.
Yeah, Daniel Odier is a practitioner, and some great scholars, Lakshmanju, George Feuerstein and others. You find mostly India, Tibet, Bhutan. There are some tantric lineages also that spread further than that. But mostly that's where you find it. And then, of course, with the wave of the hippie revolution with the Tibetan exile and so forth, there was all sorts of spiritual California tantric currents that took some elements, some of them in a more skilled way, others perhaps a little bit more superficial, not so loyal to the spirit of the tantric text and to the spirit of Tantra, getting some ideas, and a lot of it was explained in a way by Osho and some people hold him in very high esteem, and others perhaps a bit less. So this is just briefly. We can speak about tantric history for a few hours, but just so that we have a clue.
Yeah, thank you for the little history overview. Now, what stands out is that as you said, as it's not so institutionalized, it's not so easy to pin down the precise history of Tantra and where did it start and so forth. One of the ideas is also that a lot of the first... transfer of knowledge happened orally or verbally, and it's therefore quite difficult to track. Nobody knows, now it got written down, but for how long has it been there? It's not so clear. It's not like there was one savior born that moment and boom,
yeah,
and then
exactly.
You have Christianity, but or there was the great
Buddhism,
Buddha, and
yeah.
Then it all starts, but it is much more vague in that way. Also, of course, lots of subcurrents in Tantra. You mentioned already right-hand Tantra, left-hand Tantra as practicing erotically, not practicing erotically, depending, again, a little bit how we look at it. There's many ways of explaining right-hand and left-hand Tantra. Maybe we should do a whole session on this. Or it might actually be that Advaita is doing a session on this. He's having a podcast out. You'll find the link in the description. And... that's our teacher. And what is maybe the common denominator between all these different substreams? Because you could say, yeah, but then why do we call it Tantra? It's been there a few thousand years, but how do I determine that this is Tantra, this is non-Tantra?
Mm-hmm.
How do I determine when I wake up in the morning and I look at the sun with this attitude that it is Tantra, and when I look at the sun with this attitude, it's not Tantra,
mm-hmm.
right? And maybe one of the common denominators is this attitude towards the created world, the attitude towards Shakti, if you will, or some substreams of Tantra are referred to as Shaktism, that it is a path that generally embraces life. It's a path that embraces the created world, that considers that as the creator, the everythingness, the Godhead, the existence of all, the Sat, whatever you want to call it, the Great Spirit, as much as that creational point of everything is sacred, so therefore everything that sprang from it must be sacred, and therefore the entire creation is sacred. And on any path that is built on that idea and that aims to go back to the source through its creation, that would be Tantra.
Mm-hmm.
If I sit down and I stare at the mandala, with the right transfigured, beautiful inner attitude, that would be already a part of Tantra, because I'm using a manifest tool, a shape, a part of creation, in order to obtain the highest. If I'm walking down the street, I'm eating my breakfast with an attitude of complete openness, full consciousness, immersed into the moment, acknowledging that this will be the last time ever I'm going to experience this precise moment. It is never ever going to happen again. This is the only chance to savor this moment. That would be Tantra. Mm-hmm. That would be a tantric attitude. And if that awareness, for example, would be held as a practice, as a method continuously, that would be a tantric method. As sometimes, which I like very much, it is put in this way, as the tree is known by its fruits, and a man is known by his actions, the tantric is known by their inner state. And this, I feel, is a very nice sum up of what Tantra means. It's not about specific actions, very specific. Only that method is tantric. Only this thing is tantric. Only if you wear the clothes of that color and you wrap them in that way and you have the little line on the forehead and you wear the hat like this and the hair like that and you only make love on a Sunday or whatever it is, then you're tantric. No, not at all. Tantra is completely free of any outer definition. But it is only and only known by the inner state. This is also quite specific, I find, as a path. Of course, in the end of the day, all paths, they come together. And it will be also for the Christian mystic in the finality of the path, very important, what is the inner state, of course. But first, I can make some very clear outer steps. I can move to the monastery. I can do the specific discipline suggested in the monastery and so forth. And in that way, set myself on the path of Christianity. And then in time, hopefully, if I'm a good monk, then I will gain a specific inner state. There is, of course, as you say, a clear methodology also to the tantric path. I can sit down and do my hatha yoga and do my breathing methods and so forth to purify my being and all that. But if it is not done with the inner state of contemplating the sacredness of my own body, of my seven chakras, of the air as it's entering my nose, that state of Tantra and that attitude of Tantra that will bring me all the way will not arise.
Yes. You see, essentially, all traditions have the, let's say, soft, hidden mystical core. Yeah, as all Christian apostles and great Sufi saints and whatever Buddhist saints, they have their core practitioners which attain higher states of consciousness, and that's the essence. They have like their own world, they can identify each other, and they live like that. And then around this core, which without this core there would be no religion, there would be no Christianity or Islam or Buddhism, if it wasn't for people that have elevated states of consciousness walking on this path already, making some real steps. Around that, there is a crust. There is the social Buddhism, which is like Buddhism for people who can't and don't want to invest a lot. So they have their, okay, no alcohol, no violence or something like that.
Give some merit,
give charity to the poor and so forth. And they call themselves Buddhists, and they call themselves Christians, and they call themselves Muslims. And in this way, this core of mystics was able to create a wonderful, or let's say an upgraded version of society. Yeah, and most of societies today, they received, at least part of the society, received this upgrade through the mystics. Tantra never developed a crust.
Yeah.
There was never a tantric society.
Well, there was maybe in the Harappa Valley.
It might be in Harappa Valley, but it's complete prehistory. We know that they didn't have wars and that women were in high esteem. We don't know much about them, just some statues that we have.
Yeah.
We cannot interpret the writings to the best of my knowledge. Yes, and there were societies like in Bhutan, like in Tibet, where indeed it was somehow that such a big proportion of the population was mystical, was living in monasteries, that you can say they are tangent to tantric societies, but they were mostly, the outer society was Buddhist and following the Buddhist rules. So Tantra somehow stayed away from that and never developed that social crust and stayed somehow as alchemy stayed in Europe. Yeah, if you want an example, there is no alchemical society. There's not an alchemical country. But it stayed as a core practice of people that want to take spirituality as a very big, you know, very big portion of their life, very intensely, and truly elevate, enter higher and higher state of consciousness.
That's actually a really interesting point, that on one hand, the tantric practices apply immediately in life. Like you could throw out a tantric principle onto one country and everybody would get something good out of it. Take, for example, the principle of resonance. Very simple. Everything is vibration. You can attune to stuff, just to keep it short.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we make a whole episode on this. And all right, now everybody can attune to nice things and understand the principle of resonance and maybe get a little more unified in the hearts and so forth. And this is all very, very beautiful. And on the other hand, as you say, there is no established society around the tantric mystics, at least as far as we know. Well, actually, now that we're sitting here in Thailand, the Khmer Kingdom that was starting from Angkor Wat, from the Cambodian temple city, that one was thought to be built, the entire empire was thought to be built on tantric ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been interesting to visit them and see how they were living.
Yes. Yes. What stands out in Tantra is this game of contrast, this game of polarity. As you said, Tantra goes through manifestation, through Shakti, the dreamer, or let's say the dreamer that dreams the entire creation and it makes the entire creation sacred, can be found through transfiguration, through looking deep enough in every part of the dream of manifestation. So manifestation is holy. Now, tantrics would apply or reach out to find the holiness, the sacredness of all things in a kind of X-ray view. So you know that you have bones, you know, and I look at Blandine and I know that she has bones. I can see somehow the outline, but it's only through X-ray that you can really see the bone. So the tantrics develops an X-ray view, if you want. It develops a view that sees beyond and it sees every aspect of manifestation, from breakfast to people, to trees, to nature, to everything. It sees the essence there, the dreamer, the bones, the depth, which without training is normally invisible. And in that there is a great joy. And the tantric lives is a very happy spiritual path. It's very difficult and you need to be willing to sacrifice and to suffer a lot for the path. But in the essence of it, it is a great joy because you discover your beloved. You discover that which you search for everywhere. And the tantric plays very intensely on double attitudes, which makes tantra quite unique. The tantric is extremely disciplined and extremely free. You need to go full power to both. In many traditions, you just go to discipline and forget freedom. In other societies, more artistic societies, let's say you go to freedom and you forget discipline. Tantra goes very intensely. Intense discipline, intense inner freedom. And for example, Tantra goes for intense inner silence, quiet the mind very much, and yet live the experiences with great intensity. Have a tremendous emotion, tremendous love, tremendous courage, tremendous enthusiasm. And if you read biographies of tantric masters, they were all super enthusiastic, alive, spontaneous, and yet extremely silent. So tantra has this, which makes it somehow quite unique. You find it also to a degree in Taoism. But tantra embraces the best of both poles. It is very special in tantra. And what stands out very much is this let's say, path of conscious intensity. Tantra aims not to dry out the human experience in order to control it, which many religions, that's what they do. You dry out and simplify the human experience. You live in a monastery, everything is predictable, controlled, dried out, and then with a small, not intense human experience, you can have a spiritual experience which is far more intense than your, let's say, mundane one, and you become spiritual. Wonderful, it goes. It's a wonderful path. It's great for those who have that temperament. Tantra says that if you create a conscious, positive intensity in your worldly life, but with a lot of consciousness and a lot of intensity, you're able to rewrite and purify your subconscious very quickly. If you have very intense experiences of love to your beloved, to your friends, very intense and elevated erotic experiences, which are selfless, which are continent, which are full of transfiguration, which are consecrated, very intense moments of devotion. And that intensity, once you learn to control it and to stay quiet and conscious in that intensity, it will override everything else. Because our intense experiences, be it an intense trauma, be it an intense joy, it will determine the nature of our subconscious. Yeah, one trauma can destroy a person's life. 10 minutes of trauma can weigh more than 10 years of non-intensity. And the tantric says, if we want to become extremely spiritual, we can charge our subconscious with intense, elevated experience many, 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 many times every day. And through this joyous, elevated experiences of love, of peace, of pleasure, of happiness, of elevated passion, we're able to clear out the subconscious, not by drying it, but by filling it with divine aspects.
Yeah, it's like you blow the limits of the mind away by the overwhelmingness of life somehow, which is something that anyways naturally the soul tends to do. Like if you see that amazing mountain view on I don't know what holiday you're on, and you're just like, oh, just for a moment, that's exactly it. You're so filled, so fulfilled with that experience that the mind is blown, stops for a moment, unless you immediately take out your phone and take a selfie and therefore make it flat and 2D and boring. But if you stay there for a moment, then actually you have the chance to completely let your mind be blown. And basically the path of Tantra is to discover those moments in every moment. Like just anything you do, there's nothing boring, there's nothing better or worse, but any experience that you might have holds within it this wonderment somehow and awe and opportunity to meet the creator, if you will.
Yes. Yes, and one of the aspects that's a little bit ignored today and I would like to emphasize is the immense discipline and the very, very strong practices which are done in Tantra. I mean, the tantrics would train their attention, their focus, their concentration to incredible degrees. It is impossible to practice the high methods of tantras without really controlling the mind. You have to control your mind really like a master, because otherwise the intense experiences will become intense egoism. You need to hold your horses very skillfully by keeping the mind very, very quiet. It is described in the Vijnanabhairava Tantra that if you experience any intense emotion and yet you hold your horses, you stay very silent, very centered in nothingness, while you experience that intensity, the intensity will become spiritual food, ecstasy. Desire itself, if you experience desire all the way to its root, again from the Vijnanabhairava Tantra, you experience the moment, you're so attentive, you see the moment where desire comes, and you are hyper-conscious to it, the desire will resorb to its source and will bring you ecstasy. So Tantra involves a very strong inner discipline of consciousness. The tantrics outwardly are very free, inwardly extremely disciplined. And if you ever meet a tantric school and you want to see the authenticity, and you only see the intensity, you only see the freedom, but you don't see the inner silence and the discipline, it will not fly. An airplane needs two wings.
Yeah, I want to add something here, because I want to point out that real freedom you will not see in anyone that doesn't also discipline. It's just by principle, it doesn't go together. So if you, you know, because you were putting it like, okay, look at that tantric school and see if you only see the free part and so on, then and then there's no discipline. I would actually go further and I would say, if you see a group of people really free, not crazy doing stupid things that are completely meaningless, but to have the freedom to follow their heart, to have the freedom to be kind, the freedom to be courageous, the freedom to embrace, the freedom to put yourself last and the other first, the freedom to do all sorts of things that the ego hates. Clearly there's discipline there. Clearly these people are practicing. Otherwise it is not possible to be obtained. And what I find very interesting about the tantric path, and it's also soon time to wrap up, so maybe we finalize around this point, is that actually, if you are really, truly having an intense experience like you were describing, where your soul is touched, it's not just some fun thing that you do, your soul is touched, your heart is purged from the intensity of that moment, you are completely expanded into ecstasy, you feel yourself cosmic, you have the realization of all the terrible Buddhas and all the amazing Buddhas and whatever you have there. Such a moment, no matter how amazingly joyful, ecstatic, and I don't know what it is, and our ego may think, oh, well, that will be a lot of fun. It will not lead to fun in the egoistic sense. That moment, if it's a real moment and you don't immediately sell it like a prostitute to your ego, but you stick with it, you stay there, and you allow to touch that feeling, to let it even last a moment within your awareness, it will propel you into an intensity of practice that you will have never seen before. This for me is absolutely evident through my own experience and through anyone on the path that I have observed. If you have a real cosmic orgasm, for real, and it's not like, okay, you have that cosmic orgasm because you have wonderful merits that you bring from other lives and now you have your cosmic orgasm, but you don't allow it to profoundly really touch you. You don't remain aware enough to actually breathe that state in and out just 3-4 times. If you really have a cosmic orgasm, you will start to practice 7 hours. And I've seen it with many ladies especially. Easily. Easily. A woman before, I don't know how lazy and I don't know how interested and what lower pleasures and only chocolate and movies and, blah, 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 and gossiping with the girlfriends. One cosmic orgasm. By the way, and we can speak about this in later episodes, easily to be achieved by a vital woman, quite easy. And especially if you have a lust for life and you like all sorts of things, if you do some little things, you can go into that state. If you let it touch you, you cannot go back to your random, boring, lame, lazy, stupid ways. It's impossible. If you find yourself lame, boring, lazy, and not at least on a good a few hours of practice every day that you do full of heart, burning with the desire to meet God, you haven't lived. Clearly, you had no pleasure. You had some superficial sexual sports, or maybe you had some amazing states, but you didn't take them along. Clearly. And I want to make this very clear, because there is this confusion, and I've seen it in a lot of people, that you could actually still be on this idea of seeking pleasure and avoiding pain, which the tantrics talk a lot about as one of the big conditioners of human life that makes it so difficult to free yourself from the enslavement of the mind, the ego, and so forth. If you still have that preference and you still like your pleasures more, then, I mean, come on, a practice is not even a pain. It's just a discipline. Come on. It's not so difficult. You don't even have the freedom for that. You have not even one spark of life inside of you. Very simple to put it. And of course, you can see already how this is actually quite a... It's quite an intense way. It's quite an intense style, if you will. And people might think that, well, yeah, I will get myself into Tantra because I don't want to get myself into the other crazy ways of achieving enlightenment that, you know, seem a bit all over the place. But Tantra is the fast path. It's the path that leads to enlightenment in this life. And this is maybe a good understanding to discriminate whether or not you are on the path. If you are on the tantric path, you are full of life. You are, you know, not necessarily happy in the fun way that other people might know, but you are in some way blissful, sometimes in a terrible way blissful. And you are propelled into transformation continuously. You can't even help it. You feel that love of your lover. You cannot help but break another shell inside of you and just jump and in order to be closer to them, in order to even feel more of this, you will free yourself. And then we can speak about actually practicing Tantra.
Yes. So we can say, to conclude what you are saying, or to synthesize it, that the intense elevated experience will lead to discipline. And the discipline will lead to many more very intense and liberating experience, and this will somehow spiral and will continuously create the intensity of practice, will create transformation.
Exactly.
And you just crack open your limitations, your pride and your laziness and your hesitation, your lack of confidence, your lack of concentration. Everything is broken on this fire of intensity. So to give you from, this was the feminine perspective, from my life, I have a difficult conjunction. Something is pressing me, something bad happened, agitates me, I'm worried, I'm attached, I'm contracted. Instead of going to solve that thing right away, I would first do some tantric practices, 20 minutes, half an hour, very, very intense. I've been training now for a couple of decades, a little more. And very, very intense practices to reach such an intensity. In my case, the openness to the intensity that I have is to love and devotion. And it just, the intensity of it becomes so big. My problems, which were before, my problems were about my size. When the intensity of love and devotion becomes so big, the problems become as big as ants. And then it's very easy to have an overview, not to worry about them. And then I return from the intense tantric practice and can take care of these life issues, yeah, because in Tantra we don't run away from anything, but just take care of them with proportion. They lose the big emotionality, the big crisis feeling of it, and they return to be some events that in a few years I will forget almost completely and for sure not worry about. So this is just to give you a very concrete very concrete day-to-day example, which is for us, each one in the masculine, one in the feminine way, for us it is a daily experience of rising to such an intensity that the entirety of worldly life is, yeah, the triviality. And maybe to take the quote of the great master Krishnamurti, he says, when intelligence is there, and we can maybe replace it here, when spiritual intensity is there, all of life's problems appear as mere trivialities. And when intelligence is not there, or we can translate, when spiritual intensity is not there, these trivialities are all you have. So Tantra is this power to break through the trivial life and to see the ecstatic, blissful nature of reality, which is our birthright. Once you are there, and every time you are there, and you break through the banality and return to the ecstasy of the heart, you feel, this is what I was born for. It is my inheritance. It's always been here for me.
Mm. Very beautiful. I think it's time to wrap up, but what I would like to leave our listeners with is the Buddha said, the path is good.
In the beginning, in the middle, and in the end.
That's right.
Yeah.
And somehow this, for me, this is quite descriptive of the tantric path as well.
Mm-hmm.
This path of, well, I mean, Buddhism has the middle way, and Tantra calls itself also the path of balance, even though it is the path of intensity. You're balanced in the cosmic balance, not mm-hmm. in the ego balance.
Yes.
Maybe also another episode worth to talk about that. But it's this. I wanna leave you on the note to understand that all of these elements that we've been talking about today, they integrate into the tantric path. And no matter where you find yourself, if you are burning with the profound aspiration to merge with the divine, or if you find yourself simply wishing to better your life a little bit, open your heart a little bit, connect more, you will find tools and you will find means to do that within the scope of the tantric path. And the interesting thing is that somehow that will lead you into this intensity that we spoke about. No matter where you start, the path is good in the beginning, middle, and end. No matter where you start, it will lead you to that final goodness that we are all seeking for. Anything you want to add?
So many things, but we'll conclude now.
We'll conclude here, and we'll soon see you for another episode.
And first love, then do.
That's right. See you soon.
Bye.